Welcome everyone to Productivity Book Group. I'm your host and facilitator, Ray Sidney Smith. Thank you for joining Productivity Book Group, and this is our final discussion of the first 20 hours, How to Learn Anything Fast. This is our sort of the meat and potatoes of these particular chapters in terms of the practical side or the practical approach that Josh Kaufman took to learning these new skills. And so I wanted to sort of throw it out to the group and see how we felt about this particular section of the book, the latter half of the book, and what your particular thoughts were. And I always like picking on Michelle. So Michelle, you want to kick it off with sort of your initial thoughts on the latter half of the book?
Sure. So it was actually a faster read than I expected. And I really liked the practical application of the different stuff. I actually found myself reading the Go set. Like, I have no interest in learning how to play Go, and I found myself really reading and trying to understand the rules, and I was like, wait, I don't really need to know this. Like, conceptually, I liked the idea of it, and it was helpful because once I, like, you know, woke up to the fact that I really don't need to know how to play Go, I was able to skim through a bit of that, but he still had like the meat of what he learned and the practical applications in terms of learning how to learn at the end of every section. So I thought that was a very nice way to organize the information. So if there was certain parts that I didn't want to exactly read through, it was good. It was a good way of going. And I actually found those sections illuminating, even though I don't have an interest in learning how to play Go, so, or know anything about chess. So there you go.
Well, now you know a little bit more. That's the really exciting part.
Yeah. Yeah, but I will also say that now I want to change my keyboard. I texted you last night. I'm like, oh, I'm changing my keyboard to Colmac. perhaps I will use a spare keyboard for that. But and I've always wanted to learn how to windsurf, and now I'm not so much anymore. So there you go.
Oh, well, interesting. So what about the book convinced you that Colmac was going to be the keyboard layout of choice?
Well, because he was talking about how much more efficient and faster it is. I'm always up for learning new things, but especially techie things, and I feel like that might be really helpful. The only downside I can see is because he was saying like he was forgetting the QWERTY after a while, and like he reassociated his brain. I'm just wondering how that's gonna work out with all the other stuff that's in my life, like my eye devices, where it's still a QWERTY keyboard, and I'm used to, you know, with the double thumb typing type situation. So I'm a little curious about that, but I think it would be a fun thing, especially if I do it in a downtime when I don't really have to worry about, you know, production of emails and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
That's one thing to keep in mind to consider. So anyway.
Yeah, I find it really interesting because I think we've had this conversation offline many times about my own sort of dabbling both from the days of QWERTY to Dvorak and then to Colmac, and wanting to learn Colmac primarily because Dvorak is just not as common among QWERTY users because it's so difficult for people to learn, and Josh goes into a little bit of those reasonings. And I really found it, for me, Dvorak is fantastic. I mean, when you sit down with it, it's just so much more fluid. But then you understand Colmac and you understand why it's so much more important for people to know and learn about it as a keyboard layout. And I was actually really taken aback because I was asking my younger sister, who's much younger than myself, and I asked her whether they'd still taught touch typing in school, and they didn't in her particular high school. And I'm wondering if that's actually happening out there in the rest of the U.S. I find it actually be quite frightening that we're not teaching children to touch type, and actually that there isn't a standard typing keyboard prescription for phone keyboards. So I'm really interested to see whether or not that actually does develop. And so, you know, it'll be interesting whether that happens. And I just actually Googled iOS Colmac, and there is a whole thing on the Colmac website, the forum on Colmac's website, and I'll put those in the show notes for how you.
Ooh. that's very exciting.
Now we're in trouble.
Yes. So that's really great. Well, how about you, Denise? What were your initial sort of feelings about the latter half of the book?
I enjoyed the Go chapter because it was something where I probably related it to just an ancient Chinese game played by very old Chinese men, and so it was kind of interesting to go through the whole chapter. Between 6 and 9, I thought it was interesting just his whole technique in learning a more mental game like Go and that strategy and technique as far as what he needed to learn and how he broke it down into little things versus windsurfing, which is more physical sport. Even though there's a little mental play in there, there's a lot of muscle movements and things that you really need to work on that are really different from a more mental sport. I can say that I've already started my research on my project for the year, so.
Oh, that's awesome.
The ukulele going, Ray.
Well, I decided, well, would you like to share about what that particular project is? You don't have to, but, you know.
Oh, well, we talked about it a couple of, I guess it was a month ago now, where I said I probably need to learn Spanish, so.
Oh,
I pulled the trigger
right
on that before the end of the year because Rosetta Stone was having a really good sale on all 5 levels, so.
I did
sitting,
the same. I'm learning Swedish.
It's not out of the box yet, but, well, it's been out of the box. It just hasn't gotten installed yet.
I've started
looking at that and doing some minor research. I found some good a good mind map that was done by a guy in the mind mapping community on learning a language, which is something that I'm kind of studying, trying to figure out what my first little point is going to be, because obviously in 20 hours you're not going to really learn a language. You can just acquire some piece.
Right. And I think
that's what my little jumping point is. But
yeah,
it was interesting when I talked to my husband about it. Yeah. I talked to him and kind of said, you know, I'm going to go spend all this money on this thing. And he said, gosh, I'd like to learn that too. Can you put it on my computer? And I said, yes. So I actually checked this book out for him. I don't think he's opened the cover yet, but I said, okay, here's the strategy we're going to use.
mm-hmm.
So we'll see how that goes when we're working on it together.
Well, that's really great to have the social support and, you know, the first 20 hours, I think what it really helps you do is to get over that initial hurdle that you can't, that the frustration on the other parts of learning initially a skill that sort of keep you from continuing on with it. And I think that's the point, is that once you get past those first 20 hours or so, you'll then have enough meat to actually use the language. You know, you'll be able to come onto Productivity Book Group and have a whole conversation about the next book.
Oh, no.
But then the reality is that you start to be able to build on that skill if you continue on. And that's when it becomes easier and easier to learn in essence, but a more of a challenge because you keep upping the ante of the complexity of whatever you're learning. So really, really cool stuff. Michelle, you were saying something before?
Oh, I was just saying that I was inspired too to pick up a language, and I natively learned Swedish, and then my parents decided to switch languages on me at some point. I'm going to learn Swedish, and I picked up Rosetta Stone on sale as well.
Rosetta
totally
Stone
excited.
All around.
Yeah.
Well, it seems like their marketing as well as the actual program is working because people are buying it.
Well, yeah, but I think that's because we had that discussion, and then I went to look at it, and then I was like, oh, look at that, it's on sale. But Denise, I'll say that I've done a few hours of it, and it's fantastic. It really does drill it in a way that sort of really sticks with you. So, yay, exciting.
That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah,
well, I'm
that's
looking
my
forward
first
to hearing
project is to get it installed, so.
Yeah.
Well, I'm looking forward to hearing both of you in your Swedish and your Spanish very, very soon.
Online, though. It will not be online.
No, I understand. But I won't be able to. I probably could pick out some of the Swedish words. Because of my German language background, I probably could understand a wee bit of it, maybe. Otherwise, I don't think that I'd really get very far with you in Swedish. We had the 6 through 10 is the chapters that we're covering, and I found it to really be fascinating because the way in which the chapters were designed as Denise was talking about was that they were set up so that, you know, some of them were more intellectual challenges. Some were, in the ukulele sense, you know, was chapter eight was a learning a musical skill, which required both intellectual and a physical component. And then, of course, the physical component, you know, almost by itself, which is windsurfing. He sort of talks about all of these different kinds of skills acquisitions that required different facets of himself to be able to learn. And just in case you didn't capture this in the book, if you go to the website, thefirst20hours.com/, and whichever of the chapters he was learning something, he has all of the material, not all of the material, but he has more material, which sort of goes over some of the pieces of how he did it. And those are really just quick and dirty ways of seeing what gear he used. And, you know, like in the windsurfing one, he shows exactly his windsurfing equipment list and diagrams of what he was, you know, trying to learn and all this other stuff. And so that was really helpful to me, I thought, because I was trying to just sort of get a quick and dirty look at things. And it was a really great way to jump out, see it in, you know, color image or just diagrams on a larger scale than the book. And then jump back and forth to sort of see what he was doing. And so I really like that. And, so in general, I actually like the reviewing the method sections. And I don't know if anyone else sort of, you know, paid attention a lot to that, but those are really like, I actually beelined every chapter to the review the method section, read that, and then actually went back to the rest of the book, the rest of the chapter to read it forward. Did anybody else notice or do that or, have any value that came out of the reviewing the method sections?
Hey, it's Michelle. Yeah, totally. I can't sit and read the last part and then go back. It just feels sacrilegious to me with the book. it's like reading how it ends and then going back. I just can't do it. But no, I found those sections to be actually very interesting, especially because, you know, he had outlined it. And what I thought was interesting was when I did get to the review process, it was almost like a little quiz. Did I capture all those things as he went through? Did they resonate with me? Did I really get that? Did I get that learning from him? So I thought that was very interesting. Yeah, so I thought it was very interesting and helpful.
Very cool. The
Nathan, I'm kind of like Michelle. The end, I wouldn't start at the end of a chapter and then go back and read it over. But I did like the review at the end of each chapter and trying to say, kind of like Michelle, where it's, did I get that point? Did I understand what he was saying when I went through the chapter? So I enjoyed the reviews too.
That's so interesting because I'm so completely the opposite. I read some sort of like how to look, you know, how to read a textbook kind of book many, many years ago. And, it might have been some kind of, you know, how to read well kind of book, but not the actual book, how to read well. And what it explained was that you should always go back. You should always read certain parts of the book, you know, the front cover, the back cover, the inside, you know, descriptions and, you know, the author bio, as well as looking at the table of contents, the index, and then, of course, reading certain parts first. And, of course, it was, you know, I was always told to read the first sort of paragraph or so, you know, whatever the introduction was, and then to read the summary and then go back and forward. I think that works much more in a textbook environment than perhaps in, say, a fiction novel. So I wouldn't do that there. But for all nonfiction works, I still go back and do that. I read, if there's a summary and it's labeled summary or review or whatever, I will go in and read that first as a baseline and then go back through. Or if they do have a chapter, you know, outline or agenda, you know, series of learning goals, I will go through the chapter and look for those headings of the learning objectives and read those sections and then go back and read again. And I think it's just purely now such a ingrained habit that I just do it. And in magazines, for instance, I always read magazines backwards. I don't know which direction others read magazines, but I have always read magazines backwards, and I've always been told that it was more efficient to read them backwards, and so I always have, and I'm not quite sure what or where I read that, but I read it somewhere once upon a time. And
why is that? Is that because the meat of the magazine is in the back?
Yeah, something like that. It was that there was, you know how magazines will like start a particular article in the beginning, and then they'll jump to the rest of the article in the back, and
yeah,
and so on and so forth. And then there.